Good morning, everyone. Amy G here, calling all compulsive overeaters, food fixers, higher power seekers, and big book believers. This is a special commercial on A Vision for You's birthday. Happy birthday. This is really special because this is your official invitation to get yourself to the Vision for You convention. Yes, it is back. Coming this November 2025, folks, November 7th, 8th, and 9th. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, three whole days of an incredible convention at the Liberty International Airport Marriott in Newark, New Jersey. Yes, Newark, you've flown through it, I'm sure, but now it's time to heal through it. We've got three full days of life-changing speakers, deep dive recovery, fellowship hugs, oh, the really great hug kind, laugh, tears, letting go, and yes, I'm going to say it, surrender, 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 lots of it. And spiritual electricity, can you feel it? It's already in the air. I'd like to say it's better than any binge ever was. I mean, let's be real, folks. We've tossed money at all sorts of things. The time is now to toss it at recovery, throw it, jump, run to recovery, the investment that actually gives you your life back. So grab the credit card or your PayPal or even your checkbook. Say what? Yep, checks are still good, folks. And go to the website and register, register, register. Where? www.avision4you.info. Again, www.avision4.info. Book the time off. Say yes to a weekend of transformation. November 7th to the 9th, Liberty International Airport, Marriott, Newark, New Jersey. This isn't just a weekend, truly. It is a turning point. We'll be there. God will be there. The only question is, will you register now before you talk yourself out of it? Remember, in Overeaters Anonymous, we act our way into a new way of thinking and believing. So act on it. We tried isolation. Now try inspiration. A Vision for You, where recovery comes alive. Be there. Want to see you there. Great big hug coming your way. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Amy. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey, and your moderator for this morning. Today is Sunday, July 20th, 2025. For Friday, July 18th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,620, that's 22620. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,621, that's 22621. This morning, A Vision for You celebrates its 13th anniversary with a very special Sunday edition. 12 testimonials as to the experience and the results of the program of recovery and a relationship with power. 13 years ago, A Vision for You was born out of a quiet but persistent spiritual calling I couldn't ignore. With the help of God and support from others, this meeting came into being. A Vision for You began with a single purpose, to carry the message of recovery as it is laid out in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, our big book. We apply it to our illness of compulsive overeating. Since then, many have joined this phone meeting, found hope in the pages of the Big Book, and begun to experience the promises of this program. Through the shared experience, strength, and hope of our members, and a reliance on the spiritual principles found in the 12 steps, We can and do recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Today is not just the celebration of time, but of transformation of lives, lives renewed and rebuilt, relationships restored, health restored, and a continuing commitment to helping the still suffering compulsive overeater. Whether this is your first meeting with us or you've been here since the very beginning, we are grateful you are here to share this milestone. Your presence is a reminder that the message of recovery is still being carried and the solution is still working. There's no telling how many lives have been touched and transformed by the 12 steps. The 12 steps enable people of all walks of life, from all different backgrounds, people who normally would not mix, in spite of all odds, experience change, transformation, like never seen anywhere else. It means that all of us, whatever our race, our creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. We marvel and rejoice at the near impossible beginning with 30 members to now a membership of over 13,000 has really happened. But congratulatory periods can tend to smugness, resting periods to retrogression. We continue to have a responsibility to carry the message of recovery to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. No matter how different our own personal concerns, we are all bound together by one common responsibility. Clearly, our first duty to a vision for you and Overeaters Anonymous's future is to maintain and grow in full strength what we now have. Never should we be lulled into complacent self-satisfaction by our seeming success. So today, joining us as Vision for You celebrates its 13th anniversary, we will crack open the basic text and bring it to life. Today, you will hear from 12 voices, recovered compulsive overeaters, each describing in their own personal way how the individual steps have changed them. 12 stories of transformation, messages of depth and weight, creating a powerful message of hope and possibility. This morning, you will hear from the following speakers, Lindsay W., Lynn S., Craig S., Rena L., Russ M., Jen A., Rick J., Chanel T., Crystal R., Dawn B., Penny L. C., and Jason K. So let's get started with step one. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. And I welcome Lindsay W.
Good morning, Leia. Thank you so much for asking me to be of service. And I feel incredibly emotional this morning. I'm Lindsay W. I'm a compulsive overeater in Houston, Texas. And for today, I am recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And the first time that I ever heard somebody that has this thing like I have it was on a special edition of a Vision for You meeting about 7 to 8 years ago. And, I always say I am a gutter level compulsive overeater. Like, this thing takes me to the depths of hell. And I would come into Overeaters Anonymous meetings and think, there's no way that you people have this thing how I have it, because you wouldn't be happy. You certainly wouldn't be in, you know, what looks like healthy bodies. You don't understand me. You know, I came in here, I'm 5'3", and I came in at 350 pounds. I didn't want to be alive anymore. You know, my life was really small and really dark and just kind of swirling the drain. Like, that's how every day felt. And, you know, I really had a decades-long experience in step one, and I am just so grateful to be able to talk about that experience today. And if, you know, I'm talking to all of my fellows here that I know and love, and I'm talking to the person that is in the food this morning, right? Or was in the food last night and really believes that this thing is not for you, because I was the same way. And I was just so incredibly hopeless. And where it says on the first page of the doctor's opinion, XXV, the doctor is writing, Dr. Silkworth, and he says he attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, he was an alcoholic of a type I'd come to regard as hopeless. And I really identify with that. You know, I'm very competent. I was competent in business. In fact, my heaviest weight, I had the CEO of my company create a new position for me. And I was already thinking, God, how much am I gonna have to spend on upgrading to first class tickets every time I fly? Because I couldn't even fit into the economy seat. And, you know, I, at 350 pounds, I was, you know, in and out of the rooms of OA, kind of dipping my toe in, but I thought, I know I've taken step one. How could I not? How could I not have admitted powerlessness? I'm 350 pounds and I have no life. I'm in my late 30s and I have no prospects of having a partner or a family. My world is slowly just, you know, ending. And the thing is, you know, I hadn't really taken step one because I still had ideas. I still had ideas of ways that I could manage and control this thing, you know? And it was like, you know, how in Bill's story it says, you know, nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation, right? Like, I'm telling you, I was going to the bathroom on myself in my car. I couldn't even shower. I had an eviction notice on my door. I was getting kicked out of my home because I was spending all of my money and then some on food. I lived like a shut-in outside of work. You know, I would leave work early, cancel all my meetings. I'd go to McDonald's, binge all day long. I lied to my friends, and nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. And that's the true insanity of this, you know. And I also want to go to the doctor's opinion, and page XXVIII talks about the addiction cycle, or as my sponsor calls it, the addiction spiral. And it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. You know, I overeat because I like the effect that's produced. And at the last sentence of that page, they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And you see, in my life, the only thing that would take away the restlessness, the irritability, and the discontent was food. That was it. And then I'd succumb to the desire again. And then the phenomenon of craving would develop, over which I have zero control. And then I pass through the well-known stages of a spree, and I emerge remorseful. And I have a firm resolution that I'm never going to do it again. And I really mean it. Again, just like it says in our friend Bill's story, like, this time I meant business. And I did. I really did. I would throw all the food out and say, I'm never doing this again, ever. But it says it's repeated over and over and over and over. And unless I can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of my recovery. And, you know, I'm here talking on step one. We're about to hear about the steps that bring about the psychic change. And, you know, what I can say is that I today have 4 years and 3 months of abstinence. of sobriety with my food. I am down 200 pounds. I finally, you know, I was beaten down. I mean, the gift of desperation is messy, right? Step one is really painful. But I ended up on the ground, face down, you know, in the mud. Couldn't even pick myself up. I had no more options. And I just had to make a call and say, tell me what to do. I can't do it anymore. You know, I'm fully out of ideas. And, you know, it says on page 25 in the big book, there is a solution. If you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. You know, life was becoming impossible for me. And I had passed through the region. There was no return through human aid. No therapist, no family member, no partner, no niece, no nephew. Nobody could save me. I had two alternatives. And I still have two alternatives today. I can go on to the bitter end. And I can blot out the consciousness of my intolerable situation. Because I cannot do life without the food unless I have spiritual help. And thank God. Today, I am willing to accept the spiritual help. And, you know, I have 30 seconds left. And, you know, what I want to say is one of my favorite chapters is more about alcoholism. And it tells me a couple of things in there. Number one is that I'm utterly unable to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. That's the terrifying, baffling feature of this. No matter how much I want it or need it, I can't. And so then on page 43, it tells me at the very end, you know, I have no effective mental defense against the first bite. My defense must come from a higher power. And every single day for the last 4 years, my defense has come from a higher power because I cannot muster it. And that's my time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lindsay W. from Texas. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Lynn S. from Toronto, Canada.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, Vision. My name is Lynn S., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. And I'm so honored to be participating in the celebration of our 13th anniversary of this amazing meeting that literally saved my life. A really brief history. I came into OA in 1989, 36 years old, 140 pounds overweight. I lost my first 100 pounds at 16, and then I continued that bounce up and down, until I ended up at 140 pounds overweight. And it was always the same thing. I truly thought I'd lose the weight and then. And that was the cruelest heartbreak of all. There was no and then, because nothing changed. The guy didn't come over the hill on his trusty steed and whisk me away. I didn't win the lottery. And I couldn't get along with anybody or deal effectively with any of life's circumstances. Nothing at all had changed except my wardrobe. I'd been a fat, miserable, scared kid, and I remained a fat, miserable, scared kid until I came into OA, a broken soul whose spirit was completely annihilated by this terrible, terrible disease. And I didn't even come in to lose weight because I'd lost 100 pounds a million times, and it didn't make any difference. But I came in because I couldn't stop eating, and I'd really scared myself. Step one, I'm doomed. Step two, maybe not. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. This was hope. I developed an open mind, hope that food wouldn't drive me crazy every single minute of every day, hope that perhaps somehow I'd be able to actually live life, not just exist as a walking dead person. Because if God could remove the obsession and the compulsion for food, what I perceived to be the very worst thing of my existence, then he could do anything or everything else to give me a life, to restore me to sanity. But what does restored to sanity mean? And what does it look like in my life? It means living a life that God always planned for me, with a relationship with Him, sanity around food, and a loving and caring relationship with others. And physically, it looks like maintaining 140-pound weight loss since 1989, abstaining from eating my binge foods and performing my binge behaviors, identifying my binge foods, getting clarity on them, writing them down on paper, knowing the foods that once I start to eat, I cannot stop, the foods I go to when I binge, recognizing that food that's dancing on the plate probably isn't a good idea for me, or when I stick my fork in and it goes in my mouth and the top of my head blows off, let's not eat that, you know. Being able to let go of foods that start to have a compulsive hold on me. But how do I do that? I don't. And that's the whole point. Right here, right now, in step two, with the open heart and the belief that God could restore me to sanity, that belief was enough to let God start working in my life and get results. Emotionally, being restored to sanity, letting go of those thoughts and beliefs and actions that I held that caused me to see life skewed. My perception of reality was off. I was driven by 100 forms of Lynn, self-seeking, self-pity, fear, delusion, which caused me to react in ways that hurt my fellows, and they retaliated. This ability to see, to understand, accept the fact that I don't see the world correctly, that my perception is off, that my old thoughts, actions, and beliefs aren't accurate, and they certainly don't work. They don't bring me and those around me peace, joy, and harmony. Step two gave me hope. It gave me an open mind, which allowed God in. Actually, it gave me an open heart. That's what allowed God in, to start transforming me so I could let go of the need to protect myself with belligerent, caustic sarcasm, the need to be right at all costs, and the need to straighten you out so that I could at least breathe. God has transformed that need in me, restored me to have a sane relationship with the world and His people based on compassion, patience, tolerance, a genuine, sincere care and concern from others. And spiritually, the best gift of all is God's presence in my life, the gift of spirituality. Being restored to sanity, I quit playing God, and the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders and off my body. I never had a relationship with God. I never consciously wanted one, but through God's grace and mercy, I was able to open my heart and let God in, which is so much deeper than just having an open mind. And this makes all the difference in my life today. In step two, I realized for the first time I wasn't alone anymore, tossed around, set adrift on a terrible, frightening sea of constant confusion and conflict with everything and everybody. I was delivered from dying of a hopeless state of mind and body into a relationship with a loving Father God who I depend on, rely on, and trust in to guide and protect, care, and direct me. I can't be abstinent without God in my life, and I can't have God in my life without being abstinent. Age 53, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or God is nothing. He either is or He isn't. What was our choice to be? And for me, I found that either God is everything or I am nothing. The most important thing in my life today is my relationship with God, which all started with step two. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Lynn S. from Canada. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Craig F. from Oklahoma.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you so much. Thank you for your work in keeping this program, this meeting alive and functioning. And thank you for the opportunity to speak here this morning. I'm humbled by that. The step says that I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood God, understood Him. And, you know, I think I read pretty well, you know. I think I'm functionally literate. And I came in and I heard that step, and I thought it was code talk. I really did. I thought that it was a kind of a maybe politically correct way of saying I made a decision to turn my weight and my eating over to the care of God as I understood Him. Because, you know, what's the rest of my will in my life? You know, I think I have this kind of under control. You know, yeah, I probably could do better at work. And yeah, I had some romantic failures. I was going through a divorce when I first came in. There's relationships in my life that may not be perfect, but I can handle all that, you know. And as a matter of fact, if my weight and my food were in its proper place, the rest of it seems to me to be pretty easy. So I made the mistake, the mental mistake, of thinking that what I really needed to do was turn my weight and my eating over to the care of God, and that everything else would follow, everything else would come into play. Now, I didn't consciously say that was my attitude. That I look back on it and think, that's really what I was doing, you know? I was here for a cure to my food and my eating, and if I could get that, then everything else would fall in place. Guess what? It didn't work. You know, I struggled and struggled and struggled for 25 years. I struggled with that. And, you know, I came in to OA at 410 pounds. I'm 6'4". I got down to 260. Not a bad weight for me. I was kind of muscular. I had, you know, lifted weights a lot. I was not too bad. I probably could have stood to take off a little more weight, but I was satisfied. And I got what I came for. I got what I looked for, and my life was still unmanageable. My life was still not moving the way that it needed to move, you know? And the reason is that it's more than that. You know, it's more than turning my weight and my food over. If that's all it was, a diet would work. If that's all it was, I wouldn't need the rest of this program. But the fact is that when the rest of my life is out of control, then the triggers for eating are out of control. You know, the doctor says we eat, we drink primarily for the effect, and in our case, we eat primarily for the effect. And what is the effect? You know, the effect is the sense of ease and comfort that comes from taking that first compulsive bite that comes from overeating. It's the sense of the world's going to be okay because I blotted out the reality of the mess I've made around me. And so I carried on that pattern. You know, I like to think that we talk about these steps, and we talk about taking the steps, doing the steps, working the steps. We use that kind of language. But in reality, I think that we also talk about there being a distance from our head to our heart, you know, in all the steps, that we have this, that we can intellectually understand what the step means. We can intellectually understand what we're supposed to be doing. But the fact is, it's not gotten down to our heart yet. Because what gets us down to our heart is we experience the steps. We have a first step experience. We see our powerlessness. We have a second step experience. We see that God is active and wanting to restore us to sanity. We have a third step experience where we see how much our life is out of control and how much we need to be restored to sanity, how much we need to turn our whole will and our whole life over to God's care. And when we have that experience, it gets from our head to our heart, and then it becomes more meaningful. And, you know, it's okay to work the steps, and it's okay to do the steps, and it's okay to rework them and redo them until it goes from that to acknowledging that I'm having that experience, I think. And so I had that experience. I got to the place I was unable to get up, unable to walk. I was 520 pounds. I had to have a fireman come, and I was so weak I couldn't stand up. I had lymphedema in my legs, and it got infected, and I had to have firemen come and load me in an ambulance and take me to the hospital. And, you know, I did that going to OA meetings. You know, I'd relapsed so bad I got up to 520 pounds. And because my way didn't work. My will didn't work. But when I got there and I said, and the doctor said, you have a 25% chance of dying in the next 3 weeks and a 40% chance of losing your legs in the next 6 weeks if we don't take care of this just right. When I got to that desperation, that point of desperation, and I said, I'm all in. Whatever it takes, whatever I have to do, whatever I have to confess to, whatever I have to make amends for, I'm all in. Whatever it takes, I'm all in. When I got to that place, then that was an opening enough for my higher power to go to work, to take care of the deficit in my life. And I turned my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood him in the hospital bed that night. And I went to my first vision meeting the next day. That's been almost 9 years ago. I haven't lost all the weight, but I've lost over half of the weight that I need to lose. I'm 74 years old. It's coming off slow. But it's not about the food and the weight as much as it's about my life and my will. And I've turned my life and will over to God's care. And, you know, it's a wonderful place to be. It's a wonderful partnership to have, to truly know that I've turned that over, that I've let it go. And I think I'm out of time. And so with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig F. from Oklahoma. Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Rena L. from Ohio.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Rena L., recovered compulsive overeater. I'm grateful to be able to share about the fourth step. For today, I'm recovered and entirely abstinent from the symptoms of my disease, which has taken the forms of food addiction, compulsive eating, anorexia, and exercise bulimia. And I've done the fourth step multiple times over my time in 12-step recovery, and each time I've learned something new about myself and my disease. For the newcomer, I'll just give a short, quick review. And I always need the review, so I don't know why I say for the newcomer. It's for me. The big book, you know, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. The big book tells us that this is where we get down to causes and conditions. We look at ourselves honestly to find out what's been driving our using. And why do we need to do it? The big book tells us resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics, more compulsive overeaters than anything else. And we have to clear away the wreckage of our past so we can have the spiritual awakening. We can't do it. We can't get the awakening if we're still carrying around anger, fear, and guilt. The book promises we will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. my experience. It's what the book says, but it's also my experience. So when we honestly look at ourselves and see our part, we can be free from the things that drove us to use. And it's how we get ready for the rest of the steps. And with those steps, we clear away the wreckage, which unblocks us and gives us a new way to live, which for me is access to an infinite source of power, higher power. And for me, it's like an infinite source of okayness, for lack of a better term. So 22 plus years ago, getting sober from drugs and alcohol was the first time I did a fourth step. And when I got to my part, I went as deep as I could go then. I understood quickly the idea for my part. I put myself in a position to be hurt. And it was pretty basic. I drank. I blacked out. I woke up in alleys. Bad things happened. My part was easy. I put myself there. And that story was over and over again, the same story. The first time I did a fourth step in OA was out of the OA 12 and 12. Hold on, I realized I didn't start my time. Oh no, I'm supposed to keep track of it. Okay, I'm going to assume 2 minutes has gone by. Okay, hopefully that's right. I hope it's not. But okay. Sorry, hold on. I don't want to take up too much time. Okay. So when I did it in OA, I did it the first time out of the OA 12 and 12 from the OA workbook. And for that time, it was many questions about specific character traits and the way I exhibited these traits. Some examples were, have we deliberately defamed someone? Are we oversensitive? How do we react when we don't get our own way? And the fears. I looked at people and places and things that caused me fear and looked at how it affected me. How has fear made me afraid to end a destructive relationship? Has fear held me back from taking actions I should have pursued? And anger and resentment, questions like, did we hold a grudge against someone? How has sex, what problems has sex caused? Have we sought to satisfy our sexual impulses at the expense of another? There was a section on trust. Where have we been sneaky? Where have we cheated? And then a section on negative thinking. Have we indulged in self-pity, played the martyr? It took me a long time to answer those questions. It was a whole book to fill. And the biggest gift is that it helped me let go of shame in two ways. First, I could tell that after essentially playing the most honest game of the game ever with my sponsor, that my sponsor still wanted to be in my life. She still seemed to care about me. And the second is I knew OAers wrote those questions, and I figured if they came up with the questions, then somebody answered yes to these questions too. Somebody thought of these. And that also helped me let go of so much shame. I felt part of the group and I felt not alone. But that wasn't enough for me to become recovered. And that might be for somebody else, but it wasn't for me. But it was part of my process. The next time I did the steps with the sponsor, she had me do something different. For each resentment, she had me ask. So my part was, how am I like the person or institution I resent? And that was eye-opening. It really helped me have compassion for myself and others. And I really got a deep understanding of the delusion of projection. So whatever troubles me about something else is usually something about myself, some connection to me. So I'm grateful for that. But that also wasn't enough to become recovered, fully free of the obsession. In my case, to binge and then also to restrict at different times in my life. So this last time, I did the fourth step right out of the big book. And this is when things really started to change. I had always been as honest with myself as I could be with each fourth step. But for this last one, I stopped being a victim of the world. I stopped allowing the world to dictate my feelings and thoughts. I want to go back for a second. Hold on. I looked over something. I put a little note that I wanted to just the mechanics. Like, what does the book say to do? And it basically says we make lists. We make four columns and we list our resentments, people, places, things, and institutions we're at. Who or what we're resentful at, the cause, what we think they did to us, how it affects us, our self-esteem, security, ambitions, personal relations, sex relations, and our part. Where are we selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened? And then for fears, we talk, we list our fears, and we talk about why do we have them. Usually it's because, self-reliance failed us. And a sex conduct review, where are we selfish and hurt others? But that's just a quickie review. There's lots of stuff you can read about how to do a fourth step, and you'll get, hopefully, support from your sponsor. But above all, what I realized is that my part isn't just my actions. It's my thinking. It's the story I tell myself to justify the resentment. So what I learned is that anger, for me at least, is just a flash of a feeling. Everything else is story. It's the re-feeling, the going over it and over again that transforms a quick, very natural, very human emotion of anger or upset or being disturbed into a resentment. And I don't believe I have resentments because I'm an alcoholic addict or compulsive eater. And I'm not a compulsive eater because I have resentments. This is just the world according to me. It's rather, I can't handle them. I don't know how to soothe myself from the pain and discomfort that comes from resentments or constant fear. So what do? I hurt myself. I go back to the food, right? Trying to anesthetize the pain. You know, I've put the food down many times before, but I always went back. I think it was just Greg who talked about that ease and comfort I was seeking. And that's what I need the steps for, to change my thinking and responses to life. So how do I get to that power? Through a higher power. And the steps unblock me so I can access a higher power. And that's where I find a permanent source of soothing, a sense of okayness no matter what happens, that I can handle anything that happens with a higher power, program, support, etc. So I want to give examples with the little bit of time I have left about thinking. And I went with two examples. I just quickly jotted them down before we started today that I'm guessing many of us can relate to. So I went with one. I just picked a friend, Anita. She comments on my food and body size. If this isn't on everyone's fourth step somewhere, you're not. I don't know. I think it's on every fifth step I've ever heard. She comments on my food and body size, and it affects my self-esteem and personal relations. And I pray, of course, to see the truth and have compassion for both of us. And what's my part? Well, at first, the feeling is just, ouch. And then I need to tell a story. Like, I'm annoyed. Ouch. So then the story. She knows my history. How dare she? Story two. This is how her kids are screwed up around food. Secret story three. People should never say anything that makes me feel uncomfortable. I can't handle discomfort. More secret story. Layers. That what people say or think about what I eat or my appearance must dictate how I feel. That they should know better. I can only be okay if no one comments on what I eat or my size. And as I go down the stories, the real secret story. She must not care about me and want to hurt me. And deeper than that, I'm unloved and unlovable. And doing this work and this, you know, really getting to my thinking and all of the cognitive distortions, for I don't know what other word to use, I get to the spiritual truth that it's no one's job to make me okay. I am always already okay. Anita may be spiritually developing just like me, and I have compassion for both of us, and she has her own history. But something else, the deep one, is that it's not that I don't know whether people care about me or want to hurt me, but I've decided that I don't know the truth and I don't need to. Even if I have evidence that someone loves me or doesn't, it doesn't matter. I choose today to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, and that's what this work brought me to. Why not assume folks care about me and love me? Right? Or that no one wants bad things for me. Maybe I'll learn otherwise. In the meantime, my life is richer and fuller and livable when I give everyone the benefit of the doubt, even the guy who cuts me off in traffic. You know, and by benefit of the doubt, why not assume he's in crisis rather than build up all the ick inside of judging the fact that he's cut me off? I see that my time's out, so I'm not going to give another example. What I want to say is that the fourth step taught me that recovery isn't about becoming better than human. It's just seeing and accepting my own humanity and yours. And lastly, I don't think there's a wrong way to do a fourth step. The only wrong way is to not do it. So I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you, Rena L. from Ohio. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Russ M. from Pennsylvania.
Good morning, Leia. Russ M. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of this and for everything that you do to keep this thing going, the whole crew. I know one thing, that if it wasn't for this meeting, I wouldn't be on this line. And it sounds overly dramatic, but I was very sick. I'm a junkie. And this is where God spoke to me, right on this line. I had been to other meetings and it just didn't catch. I don't know. The power of the big book, those words of how it works. First thing I ever heard in a meeting was seldom have we seen someone fail who thoroughly followed our path. Something like that. The first line of how it works. It gave me hope. And when I came to this meeting, I knew I was home. I knew I was in the place I needed to be. Having said that, I was pretty much a train wreck. Bankrupt all the way around, you know, had nothing. I had everything, but I squandered it, if you want the truth of it, because I was so buck wild, nutty, crazy over this damn food that I couldn't put it down. And I don't know why. It wasn't like I was trying to live this type of life. And I heard a message. I got hooked here. I got with a great sponsor. And he put me to work, and I did what he said. And now I'm free almost 9 years, coming up on 9 years soon. And it's only through this meeting, the power of this big book, these steps, and God. I'd be nowhere. I'd be dead. All right. Enough of that, right? So the fifth step. To have a great, awesome, thorough, and just complete fifth step, that's predicated on having a complete, thorough fourth step and being honest. And I had to be honest with myself when I wrote these things down. And, you know, I could beat myself up on paper pretty good. I could, you know, I did this, I did that. I wasn't afraid to look at myself. Now, sharing it with God is pretty cool, too. I could do that. I could do that under my breath. But sharing it with another person, you know, I had to pump the brakes a little bit, and I was scared. I had a lot of fear. But yeah, I think that's natural. And, you know, I was willing to do it, but I had hesitation. But then I looked at other men in this program, other women in this program, what they had and where they were in their life. And I thought to myself, everything that, you know, not that I want, but maybe God wants out of me, 100% what God wants, is on the other side of this deal. So I had to take up and do it. And, okay, yeah, I could say it to God, and I can confess to God, but it takes something else to speak it out loud. And what's that part? I think it's page 72. Self-appraisal is insufficient. Like, you know, just like I can manipulate with food, I can manipulate with the way I act and the way I live, and I can make it look a little rosy, and I can, you know, have all these conditions on why I did what I did. And that's not for me to get clean. I just knew something else. I had to lay it all on the table, and it was hard, and I shared it, and I gave almost everything. And then there was things that came up that we, you know, when I took the quiet hour, and then we went back and worked them out and got through them. And then, you know, maybe a year later, something came up, but we took care of it with a 10 step, or we did a little inventory, a mini inventory to get clear as it's laid out in the big book, the inventory process, not the mini inventory. I'm not trying to speak wrong here. But I had to take the step. I had to step forward and do it in some way, shape, or form to get to the next step. You know, it's a 12-step program. If it was a 2-step program, and if only needed 2 steps, it would be a 2-step program. Like, you got to do these things to get clean. And I see in my experience, and this is not from a self-righteous, got it figured out type attitude. I've seen it because, you know, we all suffer this damn disease. People trip up. People trip up at 4 and 5 and other steps too. I see it a lot right around this time with my sponsees. And it's painful. It's painful, not just for me, but for them, right? It has to be done thoroughly. I can't take inventory and piecemeal it. You know, I guess it's the part in the book where, you know, yeah, we took good inventory, right? But, you know, you leave the worst pieces there, and you cherry pick. I couldn't cherry pick. I had too much on the line, and I was sick enough to do it. You know, thank God that I had a bottom, because you know what? I've seen people in my close to 9 years that died of this disease that were working with me that gave up, that couldn't get it done. And I'm not saying because of them. I'm saying the way this disease ravaged them. And I just didn't want to do that. And I'm blessed, and I'm grateful to God that I had a bottom to come up from. And I had a program of 12 steps to renew me as a person and get me. I'm probably not going to be there until about 12 minutes after I'm dead. But, you know, it's closer to what God wants out of me on this earth. And it did start with the fourth and fifth step. And I had to not BS myself anymore. And I had to say, look, this is who you are, bro. This is the type of man you are. You got to change that. And there's something about speaking that, having an awareness. And I can't work with something I don't know. If I don't say it, I don't speak it, and I don't acknowledge who I am, I have nowhere to work from. And it's freed me. And, you know, just like I relied on food, now I rely on these steps. And that's how I got to do it. And the fifth step was like a big, big crucial part of that thing. You know, after that, things started popping because I got to blow through the other steps. And then I got to sponsor people and help them do it. And that's the gift of this program, that we can be free and help someone else help them get closer to God and be free. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks for letting me do this.
Thank you, Russ M. from Pennsylvania. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Jen A. from Colorado.
Good morning, and thank you, Leia. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. My name is Jen A. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Anorexia, bulimia, exercise bulimia, pills and potions, ruled and almost ruined my life before I came to Overeaters Anonymous back in 2016. My abstinent date is May 31st, 2017. It's Memorial Day. You know, it's a holiday. Everybody says every day ends in Y. Why not start today? And for me, that's just, God's grace and mercy on me. I'm so grateful for A Vision for You. This is a meeting I came to starting 7 years ago, right around this time. It was, given to me by a girlfriend. We were riding to a AA Al-Anon retreat up in the mountains, and she told me about A Vision for You. And I've gone through the big book, I want to say 5, 6, I don't even know how many times. I'm just learning so much about this program and so much about myself. Step six is it's a self-searching thing that I've just done in 1 through 5, and I've just told everybody my deepest and darkest secrets. You know, not everybody, but my sponsor felt like everybody, right? When you're giving it up, and now I'm entirely ready to have God remove the defects of character. In step three, I turn my will and my life over to God, and now I'm going to turn over these glaring defects. And I just want to go over defects because, like, when I came into the program, I'm like, I'm defective. Like, I knew I was defective. I knew there was something wrong with me. Why would anybody be this ridiculous around food and exercise? And did other people think and eat and manipulate their food and their like I did? And what I found out is that, you know, God, I'm a human being, a beautiful woman and human being that God's created. And He gave me characteristics. And He gave them to me at birth. And the hard part is that I've taken these God-given characteristics and these instincts, and I've overused them, underused them, misused them, or I haven't even used them at all. And that's what makes them defective. And when I got to this part in the steps, I was like, oh, I could finally see that. Like, these are things that God gave me. And they're creating obstacles in my life. And what I was doing is I was eating over them. I was overly exercising. I was, you know, doing everything in my own willpower to try and get rid of these things and make myself feel better with food and exercise. And, they showed up as perfectionism, intolerance of others, laziness, pride, jealousy, procrastination. There's a list, abundant list of all these defects of character that I could see. And when I did the 4-step, I saw what those defects were, and I just needed God to make me whole again. I just said, you know what, God, You created this girl, and You can restore her to sanity. You can bring her back to normal, and I knew at step 6 that He could do it. Why? Because He already had done it around the food for me. By the time I got to step 6, I had put down the food, I had cleaned house, and I ask God, okay, God, I need help, right? And if I can't do it, You can. And so at this point, I'm abstinent, I'm living good, I'm writing this 4-step, I've given away the 5th, And at step six, I'm like, but can you take these things that are objectionable, that are making me into a mommy monster, not helping me to be a good person and a good parent and a good partner? And, you know, and the things that I would have normally eaten over, I wasn't eating over them. I was looking at them, but I was saying, oh, I don't have to eat over these things anymore. And you know what? This is where God can. If I'm entirely ready, and what does the word entirely mean? It just means that I'm completely ready to have you, God, my higher power, remove what is objectionable in my life. And when I can do that, he is going to grant me that release from those things. He granted me release from the food, the dieting, the exercise, and he can release me from every other defect and difficulty in my life. That's the beautiful thing about this program. They always say, doing what God could do for me. I couldn't even do it for myself, but God did it for me. And that's the miracle of this program. When you see that he can help you put down the food, right? I have to take the action, but then he keeps me away from the food. He keeps me away from the exercise. How is that possible for 8 years? I still am baffled by that. Now he's going to continue to show me, but I have to continue to take action. So it's running these steps. 1 through 12 on a daily basis. It's living these steps out for the rest of my life. And then he can release me. It's not going to happen all at once. You know, I'm still dealing with procrastination and perfectionism on a daily basis. It's a lifetime job of working the steps on a regular basis. And what do I need to do? I need to surrender it over to the one who has all power. That one is God. The big book says, may I find him now. And I've got to find him over and over and over again. I am never done. You know what I get to experience? I get to experience spiritual help and spiritual growth. I think, is it odd or is it God that this week I got an outreach call for step six? Another thing, and somebody else talked to me about six. Like, God was preparing my heart, and he is taking me on a step six and seven journey, doing inventory just a couple days ago. I still have pockets of agnosticism in my life. There are areas where I don't think God is capable of removing or even changing me. But I know that God wants to give me a heart just like his. That's what the big book tells me. He's going to create a transformational process in me. It's called a spiritual awakening. He's driving out the obsession of the food, the exercise, and the need for me to use these defects in the way that I've been, these characteristics in the way I've been using them, it's making them defective. That's what he's doing for me. That's a freaking miracle. To think that I don't have to run people over like a Mack truck and back up over them again. To think that I can be kind and loving, tolerant, patient, that I can listen to people. I can seek to understand. I can love people where they're at instead of me having to walk into work every day, needing to be loved, needing to be heard, needing to be recognized. I can serve God and God's kids with all my heart today. And you know what? I got to keep doing this work. I got to keep living in the steps 1 through 12, or I'm surely going to turn right back around to what? The defective way of living, to the food, to the exercise, to the pills, and to the potions. Instead, I'd love to just be able to transform the levels of consciousness of my Creator. You know, I was rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I want to stay there. And I believe that there's different levels in that consciousness of existence that I've experienced. And it's just so miraculous and it's amazing. And when I work with others, I get to see that transformation as well. So step six is just a miracle. You know, it's a small little thing on page 76. And you'll always remember where six and seven is because just transpose the numbers. It's on page 76. But all of the information and things that I learned about step six, we're in the AA 12 and 12 on pages 63 through 69. It just gives a bigger, broader picture of what these steps really are. So like Craig talked in step three, you know, I'm willing to turn my will and my life over to God. And then am I willing to turn over all these defective ways in which I've used the characteristics that he's so beautifully given me? And can I use them for his glory and for his purpose and for his honor for the rest of my life? So just so grateful, you know, it's a huge gift to think that I don't have to show up the way I used to show up in life. And that today, you know, I know that God saved a girl like me and he has a purpose for me today through these steps. And so with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen A. from Colorado. Step 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Rick J. from North Carolina. Rick J, star 1 to unmute.
Sorry about that. Rick J, I am a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. And yeah, I'm so grateful that you asked me to be a part of this, Leia. Thank you so much. And for a vision for you, which has truly led me into a deeper understanding, you know, of the spiritual actions in the big book and to take them on a daily basis, which transforms my life. You know, I've struggled with overeating since I was a child. And, you know, when I got older and, you know, into high school age, I discovered other things, you know, alcohol, drugs, you know, that would fill that hole in my soul. And, you know, after I got sober back in 1987, I realized that, you know, I was struggling with food, with sugar. And a friend of mine in AA told me about OA, and I started going to meetings, and I went with this sort of, you know, I wanted to be open-minded, but I was like, I just did not want to be a compulsive overeater yet. I was eating compulsively, and I could not control my eating once I took that first bite. And I know that that's what makes me a compulsive eater, but I still resisted the idea of it at meetings. And I just, part of me felt this kind of arrogance that I knew all about, you know, what recovery looked like, working the steps. And I was so clueless. I didn't know that I didn't know. And perhaps now I know that I don't know. And that's a little bit of spiritual progress, but I really related to hearing people share on a vision for you when someone at a meeting had, you know, suggested that I listen to the phone meeting. And, you know, I ended up getting a vision sponsor who I'm still working with. And this was, I'd say, 6 years ago. I had 4 years of abstinence and then reset my abstinence date because of getting off my food plan. I wasn't binge eating all the time. I wasn't eating sugar, but you know, I felt like I was not being honest with myself, and I had all these reasons that you know, to justify why I had done it, you know. But it's just that dishonesty, that is still that, you know, that selfishness and dishonesty that's a part of my life. And if I don't have it removed for me, I will continue the same behaviors that continue to block me and to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. You know, step 7 is in the big book, basically a prayer, you know, and it says when ready, you know, when we've worked step 6 and we're ready, we say a prayer, something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. So when I've done this in the past, there was a part of me that's like, oh, I'll just say this prayer and I've worked step 7. And I'm overlooking a crucial element of step seven, which is humbly. The more I am, you know, like tuned in to what I'm actually asking the God of my understanding to remove and how it's affecting me and the lives of others and the emotional impact that I feel from that, then it's hard for me to truly proceed with humility. And I love the definition of humility in the AA 12 and 12 in step seven, which says that basic ingredient of all humility, a desire to seek and do God's will, was missing. And, you know, it's perfect timing, you know, where they've got step seven because, well, we're, you know, we back up a step and we're entirely ready. You know, we're entirely ready, which is a process in and of itself. And I can't be entirely ready until I've released these things with God and another human being. And I can't release that until I've done the inventory. And I can't do that until I've made a decision to do it. And I can't do that until I'm relying on a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. And backing up, one, because I am powerless. I'm powerless over my food. I'm powerless over my life. So at this stage, you know, it's so easy for me to just sort of like, you know, treat the step seven prayer in the big book as kind of a speed bump. Okay, I got it. And I move on. Sorry, my voice might go in and out of here. You know, and I always thought, you know, that the purpose of doing a moral inventory was to tell someone else the secrets you were telling, and that way you would feel that lift of not carrying that burden anymore, which would release that stuff, and then I could connect more, which, you know, that release and connect is something that I totally identify with. But, you know, recently I've been going further, you know, into that release aspect. And I'm coming to understand that the real purpose of a moral inventory, a personal inventory, the personal house cleaning, is to identify the character defects which are blocking me from this power that can transform me into people in my life and myself. And to have them released is something that, of course, I cannot do. And the only way that I can truly understand and know what I am bringing to my higher power to be removed is the fourth column of step four. The fourth column, you know, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? You know, we put them down. We put them down. And with that, I realize I'm out of time, but it's just such a gift to be able to bring these to my higher power on a daily basis and have them ask humbly for them to be removed. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Rick J. from North Carolina. Step eight. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Chanel T. from Washington.
Thank you, Leah. Hi, I'm Chanel T. in Washington State, grateful and recovered compulsive eater by the grace of God. Happy anniversary, Vision. This is exciting. I'm a compulsive overeater, undereater, and exerciser, and I do believe I was born with this disease. Most of my life, I lived in utter bondage to food and food behaviors. I'm sure a lot of you can relate. I lived on a roller coaster that wasn't any fun. It's a roller coaster of binging, restricting, exercising like a maniac, being a slave to the body scale of what size I wore. When I was restricting, I'd come over to your house to hang out with you, but first I'd use your bathroom and lock the door, strip naked, get on your scale. Did it look any better than what my scale said? Because that number and how much I exercised determined if and how much I ate that day. Other times I binged my brains out and avoided the scale at all costs. all the time I hated myself, thinking I was nuts and that this was all my fault. I didn't understand that I have a disease, that I'm powerless over food. First coming to OA in 2016, I came so that you'd give me a free diet with group support. And I left in 2017 with a resentment, telling myself, OA doesn't work. Yeah, well, I didn't work it. And what did I do? I went the only place I knew, which is I went right back to the food and that roller coaster, gaining and losing 100 pounds over and over, going too far up and too far down until I couldn't take it anymore. When I finally came back to OA at the end of 2022, I knew I was dying and I knew I needed a spiritual solution. January of 2023 began my full surrender and working the steps in entire abstinence with a sponsor using the Big Book. Today, I'm not cured, but I live in freedom from that bondage. Do you want to know a secret? I have a crush on step 8. It's one of the steps from a book outlining a spiritual program that we talk about on this meeting. And all of these things my higher power uses to save my life every day. That's something to celebrate. So let's get into it. Step 8 made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. The Big Book discusses step 8 on page 76 in the third paragraph. I've got it back. As I worked through steps 1 through 7, I did it in desperation, but I did not believe it would work for me. I knew this was the last stop, but I only had the tiniest speck of hope it might work. So here I was acting as if, and my sponsor knew this, I was honest with her, acting as if God would restore me the sanity, working these steps as my last resort so I could live with the disease instead of slowly dying from it. On page 76, third paragraph, it says, we need more action. So step 8 is an action step, y'all. I made the list from my 4-step inventory for sex and other harms. My sponsor had me make 4 columns, now, later, maybe, and never. And I didn't rely on my own thoughts of what needed to happen here. I involved her, and I relied on my higher power, both essential in this step, in every step. I'm going to put a special plug in for a sponsor's help on step 8. When my sponsor asked why my sister-in-law was on the later and not the now list, I said, and of course this is part of step 8, I'm not willing yet. It says in the paragraph, if we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. It reminds us that we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. Well, I didn't feel willing to go to any length with that one amend yet. Not at all. I wasn't willing. I knew I'd harmed her, but felt she'd harmed me more. She started it. I used that to justify my resentment, and we all know where resentment would get me. And then, by coincidence, or as I like to call it, a God incidence, I heard a fellow talk about the prayer on page 552, the Bless Them, Change Me prayer. I did it just like it says for 2 weeks and miraculously started seeing and feeling differently about my sister-in-law. No, I didn't want to go hang out and be friends, but I finally felt compassion and understanding for her. That was huge. That's transformation in me, not by me, cooperation by me, and the action of transformation happened by my higher power. I said that in a tongue-twisted way, but you do what I meant. Is that the end of this story? No, I still hemmed and hawed, making excuses until, and here's how important a sponsor is. My sponsor finally asked me, Chanel, how free do you want to be? If you don't do this, you will go back to the only other solution, the food. So we set a date. I was finally, knowing I had to do it to recover, finally willing to go to any lengths. So here I am a couple years later, right? And I get to learn this again while going through a year-long workshop, taking a deep dive through the steps. I got to step 8, made my list. It's a different list this time. And I moved right along into willingness and the next actions. True? No. I sometimes have to learn things more than once. Once again, I made excuses this time because I was afraid. I wasn't willing to go to any lengths yet. Once again, my step guide and sponsor called me out on my BS and the question came, how free do you want to be? Well, I want to be free. The Big Book says willingness is indispensable. It's not optional. I don't have to want to do it. I am willing to do it, just like I don't always want to do the laundry or walk the dog, but I do it anyway. I do it anyway. I am willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, in my case, over food and food behaviors. I'm willing to make amends to all I've and that gets me what I wanted all along. A beautiful relationship with God, myself, with everyone else. It saves my life every day. It saves my life. What a wonderful way of life. I love it. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Thank you all for this meeting, for vision, which also saves my life every day. Today, I'm willing, with God's help, with my sponsor's guidance, and I'm free. For that, I'm eternally grateful, and with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Chanel T. from Washington. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Crystal R. from Canada. Crystal, star 1 to unmute.
Sorry, can you hear me, Leah?
Yes.
Great. Hi, everybody. I'm Crystal R., recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. When I joined program, I was over 250 pounds, less than 5 feet tall. My doctor said that I wouldn't live past my 30s, and honestly, I didn't care. I had decided that I was going to eat what I wanted to eat, and I was going to die eating it. So these steps literally saved my life. For the last 7 years now, I've been in recovery. I'm in a normal body weight, and I don't want anything to do with my alcoholic foods. My life is just, it's an amazing adventure. I have a God today that I'm not scared of and that I actually trust, and I like myself. Like, I don't want to be anybody else other than me for the first time in my life. And that meant going through all of the steps to get there. Step 9 was really scary for me because before program, you know, to admit that I was wrong, it was just the worst. Like, to me, it was a defeat. It basically meant you win, I lose. Everything you did was right and fine, and everything I did was just garbage. That's how I saw it. Or it was a survival tactic. Like, shoot, I got caught. I need to get out of this. So fine, I'll just throw sorry out there so, you know, I can just get out of the consequences. Or it was a strategic tactic. It was like, I want you to apologize to me, so I'm going to apologize to you in the hopes that you will be a decent human being and at least say sorry back. And then the last was that it was just meaningless. Like, there was no action that came out of it at all. Nothing changed. It was more just like, you know what, I'm tired of fighting and I'd really like to watch Netflix now, so let's just end this, say sorry until I do it again next week. I had no idea how to make a real amends. I had to approach this with a completely different heart and a mind. In fact, like it's not a coincidence that there are 8 whole steps before I talk to another person outside program for all of this stuff. You know, and I'm going to say, if you ever want to get a lot of really good practice making amends, I highly recommend getting married. It's an excellent source of amends. But 2 years ago, I got married, and my husband, Alex, is just a really such a kind, loving, honest, emotionally healthy, good man, and I'm so grateful for him, but he's also very different from my family. And in our first year of marriage, my family was treating him really poorly, and he kept telling me, you know, I'm not okay with their behavior, I'm not okay with being treated that way, but I was just so scared of conflict, and I was so scared of disappointing my parents. So whenever he'd bring it up, I just wanted to go away. I would question him to be like, really, come on, is it that bad? Or I'd be like, you know, use my tactics. Like, listen, just do what I do. Like, we all know that they're like this, but just keep the peace, you know, just stay under the radar, just laugh it off. And he wasn't going for any of my tactics because he respects himself too much for that. And and that year I had to do some of the hardest step work I have ever done. Really, it was really hard for me, and I slowly started to actually speak up and stand up and say no to my family and speak up for him. And last Christmas, he made a really hard decision, and he decided not to be around them anymore because their behavior wouldn't stop. And I supported him fully in that. My parents were really angry, but I stood by him. And this time around, you know, I went through the steps again recently, and this gave me a chance to really look back and see my actions and my motives so much more clearly. And as I did that, oh gosh, I just cringe. Like, I looked at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, just the way I tried to convince him that his feelings weren't real. How, like, even when I'd speak to my parents, how scraping I was, how, you know, just trying to gloss things over, make everything okay for everybody. You know, just, I couldn't say what needed to be said. And I knew I needed to make an amends to Alex, but I didn't want it to just be another story. It needed to be real. And so there were five things that helped me. The first thing was that it needed to be sincere. So that meant I needed to do all the steps before, but especially step 6 and 7, because I needed to come to this knowing what the real nature of the harm is. And I need to come to this not with like, I'm sorry because you're mad at me, or please don't be mad at me, or I'm sorry because you won't like me, or I'm sorry because I can't get away with this anymore, or I'm sorry because please don't leave me. This was, you know what, I don't want to be this kind of person anymore. Even if nobody else sees it or knows it, I want to be the kind of person that can say what needs to be said, that stands by her person, that can say no to her parents when it needs to be said. I don't want to be this way anymore. It became objectionable to me, and that had to come from that sincere place. The second thing is I needed guidance. Like, I could so easily do more harm here. If I went in to speak to Alex and just kind of threw out all my feelings and this is what I was thinking and these were all my fears and, you know, threw everything on him, that would be a lot. I mean, this was a painful memory and experience for him too. So I needed to not go in there like a bull in a china shop. I needed to be really delicate, and I needed to go to God and get quiet and ask for the words, talk to a recovered sponsor and get a sense of, wait a minute, am I doing this to make me feel better, or is this actually going to make a difference for him? The third thing is I needed it to not be groveling or heavy. You know, like the way I used to apologize in the past, it was just so heavy. It was like, oh, I'm just the worst person ever. I'm the worst wife. I'm a horrible person. You deserve so much better than me. First of all, that's not true. Honestly, I'm a human person. This was really hard, and this hit every button and nerve that I've got. You know, all I needed to do was tell the truth. Look, I really regret what I did, and I want to be better for you, and I will be better for you and for me, you know. And more importantly, I told him what he needed to hear, which was, I'm proud of you. You did the right thing. And you know what? I've got your back. And then the fourth was, I needed to not look for anything from him. Whatever his response was, it doesn't matter. Now, he was super kind and he accepted it very graciously. But even if he said, you know what, I'm not ready to forgive you, he's totally allowed to do that. It doesn't matter. I'm doing this because I want to be a different person with him. And then it had to be meaningful. You know, to me, an amends is not about saying sorry. It's about giving him now what I should have given him then. So today, I've got his back and he knows it. I'm not afraid to say what needs to be said. Something's changed in me. Like, when I'm around my family now, I'm not scared of them. There's a strength where I can just say what needs to be said in a kind and truthful way and not be scared of the consequences or what they're going to think of me. Step 9 has completely changed me on the inside, and it's made my marriage stronger because I get to be the person that God wants me to be and that I want to be. And today, Alex and I are happy, and we're focusing on our little family. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Crystal R. from Canada. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Dawn B. from California.
Good morning. This is Dawn B. from Southern California, and it is just a privilege to be here on the 13th anniversary of Vision for You, a meeting that has truly changed my life, and I'm so grateful for it. I came into this program back in the late 1970s when I was 19 years old. And I have been in the program since then, but it took me, if you're struggling, if you're out there listening to this right now, and it's been quite a long time that you've been in program, but you haven't been able to maintain abstinence for any length of time, you're not alone. It took me 34 years in the rooms before in and out of the rooms. Some of that time, the only one who knew I was a member was me. But in the program, always considered myself a member. And it took me 34 years before I was able to get a lengthy period of abstinence. But now, all thanks be to God, it's been 13 years of abstaining and doing so happily. And I'm down over 120 some pounds. I don't really know how much weight I've lost because I stopped weighing myself when I was at my top weight. But I'm now at a slender, normal body weight. And I and to be at a state where I'm abstaining and doing so happily, I simply never would have believed that would ever be possible, to not be white knuckling it, to not have it be a struggle. But it absolutely is. Joy. It's simply the most loving thing I can possibly do for myself, day after day, year after year. what I have learned through this process, and today I'm going to be speaking about step 10 and the incredible learning and growth that has taken place through this. The 12 steps is absolutely life-changing. And today I'm going to be talking to you about how life-changing step 10 has been for me. You know, when I came into this program, I just wanted to feel better, and I was using food to do that. Food was my higher power. It was my comfort. It was my ease. It really, I looked to it to try to feel better. But the problem was, it was like chasing a mirage. It never really it, and I would come up with a mouthful of sand. And then when I put the food down finally, I then realized as I started working through the steps that underneath that, I'm trying to feel better by seeking my ease and comfort from trying to control others and circumstances. And that as well was like chasing a mirage. It just doesn't satisfy. I always move on to the next thing I'm upset with if one thing gets resolved. And it really is exhausting to try to control life, to try to be the higher power myself, to try to, you know, run the show. I used to introduce myself as, you know, hi, my name is Dawn, and I'm a recovering higher power. And it was so true because I was really trying to really run the show, you know, to get life and others to be different so I could feel better. And that as well was like chasing a mirage because it does not satisfy, and I end up with a fistful of sand. And this program, and step 10 especially, is a way to seek to feel better by seeking my higher power's will, my higher power's way. And that is the only source, capital S, that truly satisfies. And when I seek to feel better, through seeking my higher power and my higher power's way, what I end up with is not sand, but I end up with a peace that is not dependent upon circumstances. And that is a beautiful way of life. So in step 10, you know, how has it been life-changing for me? Well, it has taken me from, you know, whenever I feel any unrest of any kind, any disturbance, any ripple in my, you know, you think of my peace of mind as like this tranquil pond, is all glassy. And any ripple in that, any disturbance when I'm feeling, you know, restless, irritable, discontent for any reason, I do a 10th step on it. And so when I'm doing the 10th step, it basically has been so helpful to me because I don't sweep things under the rug. So I do have a commitment to doing it on a regular basis. I essentially do it on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day. But just looking at anything that comes up that is taking my peace away, my peace of mind. any fear, resentment, selfishness, dishonesty. You know, I look at those things, and then I ask God to remove them. And and what I say is that, yes, to do a 10-step, whatever, there's many ways to do it, but please do it whatever way helps you, gives you the release, helps you to feel better. That's the best way for you to do it. And the only wrong way to do it is to not do it at all, in my opinion. So when I do a 10-step, I'm looking at this issue and I'm basically, you know, humbling myself and just saying, you know, this is not working. The way I'm looking at this is not working. I'm experiencing fear. I'm experiencing whatever unrest. And I'm asking God to remove this. And then I'm discussing it with someone. And I am looking for God's perspective on this. So that has been super helpful to me to say, God, I can't do this. You can. Please help me to see this more like you see it. Help me to see this person more like you see them. Help me to love them as you would delight in me loving them. And step 10 has also helped me in that I'm closing my eyes, my vision, and not relying on my vision and relying on God's vision. And it says in step 10, you know, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with me constantly. And when I do that and just ask for God's vision and know that comparatively speaking, yes, I really am blind, but God sees perfectly. So help me to see this more like you do, God. And I'm when in that process, I am just restored to a sanity and restored to that living in the fourth dimension, which is living by God's way, not mine. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dawn B. from California. Step 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Penny L.C. from Washington.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you for your service. Good morning and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. I came to OA in earnest in 2010 after half efforts for 6 years before that. I had 5 years of abstinence when in 2016 I took my will back for 36 hours, diving back into the food. I had let go of my higher power's hand and was trying to control my son's life. I recommitted April 10th of 2016, yet that was a gift. That slip was designed as I clearly saw how much I could not do life on my own. My power was not sufficient and never would be. As I reflect on step 11, I am guided to seek through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand him, praying only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. For me, I first needed to redefine God. The God I was originally acquainted with was judgmental, distant, and demanding. I wanted a connection, but I never felt that I measured up to my old God's expectations. I thought I needed to have my act together to approach him. Never felt I'm good enough and was resistant to even reach out. Once I took the liberty to redefine my higher power and bring my concept in line with my true desires, then our interactions became more natural, more real, and more fluid. Now that I had an open channel, I needed to learn how to use it, and to practice using it. From there, I was able to develop and build a deep level of trust with my higher power. My step 11 started out sporadically, but then evolved into a daily routine with some encouragement from a sponsor and with a goal of spending time in prayer and meditation throughout the day. My prayer time is speaking with my higher power, either speaking within or when no one's around, speaking out loud. My prayers may be the standard memorized variety, such as the Serenity Prayer, the Third Step Prayer, the Seventh Step Prayer, the 11th Step Prayer, or the free-flowing, open, communicating variety, simply sharing from my heart. I will also, when alone, sing uplifting spiritual songs of praise. My meditation time can vary in scope. I may sit quietly, empty my mind, and listen. I may listen to guided meditation and then sit in reflection. I may read meaningful literature and then listen. No matter the form, my intention is the same, to grow my conscious contact with my higher power. For me, my contact encompasses not just morning, but also any time during the day when I need a spiritual boost. If I find myself disturbed or irritated or annoyed or even downright resentful, I pause and ask myself, I ask my higher power for a reset. I remain connected until I feel my sense of balance return. Otherwise, if I don't sense that, I may need to follow through with a 10th step intervention. When I face a challenge in the day, I ask for guidance and meditate on the course of action I am to follow, trusting I am walking in the love and light of my higher power. Later in the evening, I engage in my nightly review. I am called to follow the outline given on page 86 in the Big Book. I ask myself every question in the first paragraph. My task is to report my findings and commitments to my higher power. When I am accountable in this way, I gain a sense of relief and release. I end my day in a prayer of thanksgiving for the connection and leadership from my higher power throughout the day. Excuse me,
Penny.
I was interrupted. I'm so sorry.
Go ahead, Penny.
I'm sorry. Okay. In following through on these daily spiritual tasks of connection, I'm able to maintain a healthy channel between my higher power and myself. I'm able to keep myself in fit spiritual condition. This enables me to go forward in service from a recovered perspective and to pass on the light and love that I received. I have been blessed and am able to endeavor to bless others. Thank you for allowing me to share. With that, I pass.
C from Washington. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Jason K. from Pennsylvania.
Thank you so much, Jason KP. Leah added the P when I got married. Recovered compulsive eater, bulimic in Pennsylvania, hanging out here with Russ in the same county. I am a recovered compulsive eater with about 7 3/4 years abstinent. You know, I remember as a kid a vivid memory up against some plexiglass at a place looking at these donuts, calculating which one's the biggest one, staring at it intently. You know, I remember when I was a young teenager, my, you know, bugle boy jeans not fitting me so well, and hockey coaches telling me to lay off the donuts and kind of laughing at me. I remember in my 20s, I was throwing up, seeking out therapists, starting to go to Overeaters Anonymous meetings, coming out of dingy basements, thinking I don't want to be part of that group. But I spiraled down the drain in OA, going to meetings, not having great sponsorship, thinking I need to work every tool every day, being obsessed with a food plan, getting periods of abstinence, and always going into devastating relapses. So as I was spiraling the drain and just getting more and more committed to Overeaters Anonymous, willing to have a food plan that did cut out my alcoholic foods, I went to the Vision for You conference in 2017, September. I saw the light in people's eyes. I could see a twinkle in people's eyes, sort of a shining of the Spirit of God within. And this didn't seem metaphorical for me. This felt like the real experience. These people at the Vision for You conference spoke with such a conviction and passion and intensity that I saw what recovery looked like in an embodied form, just like Bill saw in Eddie Thatcher when Eddie came to call on him. I left this conference with a new sense of hope that recovery was possible. Sunday morning, I was in the conference center. You could hear a pin drop, even though there were hundreds of people in the room, and Harlan was passionately talking about step 12, and I had goose pimples. Later on that night, I seemed to be magnetically called into one of my favorite binge restaurants with no sense of control, saying, "This is insane, I can't do this, I have to stop." And I binged that night, and I said, "This is insane, I can't do this, I have to stop." I did that for the next 4 or 5 days in a row, until something broke inside me. I did not make a conscious decision to be abstinent. I found the willingness to be abstinent, and I had the absolute desire and knowing that I needed to be willing to go to any lengths. That evening, I don't know if Craig remembers this, I called Craig, and I asked a bunch of questions that my pride had kept me from answering before. I became willing to get out of a relationship that was a very, very toxic relationship, to live and to move towards a spiritual life. And I started on a journey. I was launched through the steps in a very quick fashion due to an intense, deep, and profound step one experience. My sponsor had said something like, "Oh, this is really amazing to see, you know, you getting this and going through all this and changing." And I was almost confused. I wondered what he was talking about. This seemed like common sense. It seemed like telling me the law of gravity was in effect. Well, duh. And I just had to do this, and I went to any length. I made amends. I did a 4-step that was transformational. About 2 months into the sponsorship relationship, and it was actually one of Craig's sponsees, Noah, was working me through the steps, and he said this phrase to me: "What's really going to fire your recovery is sponsorship." Oh, interesting. So I reached out and I got some sponsees, 2 sponsees. In fact, I remember one day when I was sitting there praying in my bedroom after a day of work, there was just this heaviness to me and this sense of like, what am I doing? What's my purpose? And I just felt kind of scared, and a sponsee called. Immediately everything transformed. One of my new guys, I was so excited to be working with people, to be sharing my experience, to be working them through the big book. Step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Briefly speaking to practicing these principles in all our affairs, this way of life, a spiritual way of life, focused on prayer, seeking God's guidance, taking inventory to stay unblocked from God, and being of service, is who I am. When people ask me, "How's your program going?" I get confused because I'm wondering if they mean, how is my life going? How am I living? How is everything about my world? How is it, right? Because every part of this is who I am. Yesterday, I was considering, we took a loan from my mom to pay back to do a solar power project. We have $6,000 extra. There was this little teeny little thought, like, we could hold on to that or spend it in some different way. And immediately, absolutely not. I'm living a spiritual life. I would in no way do that. She's getting that extra money back. I live a life of integrity, through and through, service, loving others, tolerance, whether I'm at work, whether I'm at home, when I'm by myself, I'm praying. It's all a part of who I am. Speaking to the first part of this, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, this was absolutely clear to me. When some people call me and they say, Jason, I don't know if I'm ready to sponsor, I say, have you had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps? If they say yes, I say, you're ready to sponsor. Sponsoring is the thing that brings me closest to my higher power. It is the unique gift that I have, having overcome my particular pain and suffering with food, bulimia, and compulsive eating, that I can turn and be of service and talk about the miracle that God has wrought in my life, and I can help the next compulsive eater. And when I connect with that compulsive eater through the process of identification, I sometimes get the deep feeling that they are me and I am them and there is no boundary. And they're speaking my first step experience, and I'm holding out the hand of my spiritual awakening. It is a deep and profound experience that you should not miss, and I encourage you to sponsor as many people as you can, and nothing so much, I'll finish with this quote, 7 minute timer going off, nothing so much will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other methods fail. And thank you, I thought.
Thank you, Jason KP from Pennsylvania. Thank you to our 12 speakers today, Lindsay W., Lynn S., Craig F., Rena L., Russ M., Jen A., Rick J., Chanel T., Crystal R., Dawn B., Penny LC, and Jason KP. And thank you to the Fellowship of A Vision for You. Thank you for 13 years of gathering each morning to crack open the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, to bring it to life based on our experience as recovered compulsive overeaters. The spiritual chain reaction that grew from Ebby and Bill W. to Dr. Bob in Akron, Suzanne S. in California, with Overeaters Anonymous beginning on January 19th, 1960, to A Vision for You, which began on July 18th, 2012. The message of recovery has since been carried around the globe by all of you. Thank you so much. Thank you to the countless voices, each one of you, each one a living testament to personal transformation. From all parts of the world and across time zones, you have shared your experience, your strength, your hope to those compulsive overeaters who still suffer. And we will now close from page 164 in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until